Hello, I'm Renee Vaughan Sutherland, and welcome to Greater Than 11%, a podcast born out of the shock and surprise that according to a report published earlier this year, that only 11% of women currently hold the title of creative director within the media industry. As an artist and creative director myself, I'm not oblivious to the inequality, which, let's face it, is rife in most industries, and spurred on by the 2018 Create Your Futures event, which challenged those attending what they would do to address the imbalance, the concept for Greater Than 11% was born. The ultimate aim is to contribute to significantly increasing that very small percentage. Having reflected for some time over the potential reasons as to why, across the board, there is such a disproportionate number of women to men in creative roles, I arrived at the fact there is a lot of careers that I have absolutely no idea what they are or actually what skills they require. So the possibility to inhabit or aspire to have those roles can never eventuate. I should also say here, there is of course many other factors that contribute to inequality, misogyny being quite a significant one. As I'm super interested in how others shape their creativity, I'll be chatting to a range of women over the series, exploring their careers and their creative lives, in the aim to expand the knowledge of the vast number of options available for pursuing a creative career, in addition to shedding some light on what others do. Today I'm joined by Basha Kusner, an assistant designer and cutter who has been part of the costume department for a vast number of Hollywood and British films, in addition to series for the BBC, Netflix and Amazon. Not only is she fabulous with working with clothes, she's equally spectacular at wearing them and is always gorgeously turned out. She is exceptionally generous and an open person, and with full disclosure, I must admit she's one of my dearest friends. In the past, we've shared a flat on two occasions, have travelled far and wide together, had many a glass of Prosecco, and have collaborated on a number of my films and performances where Basha was responsible for the costume designs. And I fear we're also in grave danger of sounding like an episode of AbFab for our excessive use of calling each other darling. So on that note, welcome to Greater Than 11%, Basha, darling.
Renee, darling, hello. I'm afraid that after this intro, anything I will say will be just so boring. How could you do it to me?
Hardly. Look, I'm so pleased that you're here. And we've discussed, I felt it's super important that you be the guest on the first episode of Greater Than 11%, because we have both borne witness to each other's creative journeys over the past 15 years. As we met in 2003 on an Art Foundation course, when we both had decided in our mid-20s, maybe you were slightly older, for a change in direction and left careers where we both fairly established and well-paid to pursue something more creative.
That's true.
I should also add you left Poland and moved to London a year before, so a significant and determined change.
Absolutely.
And I'm wondering if we could kick off with you talking a bit about why you arrived at that point to make that change.
I think which you know, and we were talking about this many times, some people have to choose a decision what to do with their lives just simply too early when they don't know about their lives, when they don't know about themselves and they know about the world, and that was my case. So the course at the university I did choose was very interesting, social sciences, brilliant. I had so much fun studying there. I love reading, I'm quite academic, it was fantastic. And then because I still didn't know what to do after this, I did the MA in social sciences. Again, I at this time couldn't imagine any more interesting subject than social sciences. Loved it, but then graduated and then the reality happened. But I was lucky, actually probably quite lucky, that I got a job in one of the biggest consulting companies, PricewaterhouseCoopers, and it was then in Poland like number one employer. I really don't know why they did employ me, to be honest. So the first couple of years there was fantastic. I was earning my own money, decent money, and I was enjoying it. But then reality started creeping in, and I realized I'm working in the office, and I don't even really know what I'm doing. It was, my role was quite, I couldn't even really describe why I'm there and what I'm doing and what my input is. And I started getting more and more depressed about it. And I came to the point where I thought, if this is what I'm doing till I retire, I simply cannot. Mm-hmm. And there was the moment of where I simply decided to quit it. And I knew that I have to be doing something creative in my life. But I also knew, and I cannot tell you why, it was pure instinct that I just cannot do it in Poland. The whole education system, I thought, was far too conservative to kind of allow anyone study again and support themselves. I just knew I cannot do it in Poland. So I came to London without really much of a plan.
Well, that non-plan worked out really well, didn't it? Well, obviously, you met me, so that's...
That helped. That helped enormously.
Okay. So maybe we can take a step back, because in the intro I said, I talked about us meeting on our foundation course. Mm-hmm. So we both did foundation in art and design.
That's correct.
And then I wonder, so taking you from that point up until mm-hmm. becoming your kind of current role as assistant designer, what was the journey?
As you know, the journey wasn't straightforward at all, starting from me choosing what I want to study. Because I don't know if you remember Don,
yes.
our tutor. She suggested first that I should study fine art, but I simply didn't believe in myself as fine artist, even if I would love to do it because I loved our foundation course so much. And then she suggested that because my work is quite theatrical, I should maybe think about theatre design. And that really spoke to me, like, how could I not thought about it? Mm-hmm. Oh, my God, it's so brilliant. So I did look up all the colleges and courses, and Wimbledon School of Art sounded the best. And I got a place on a set design course. And then I remember being really disappointed because the course, and it's absolutely my fault because I should have applied to a theatre course, but that was film set design, mm-hmm. Where I realised it's, from my point of view, mm-hmm. it because in a theatre you can use metaphors in design, but in film you don't. Mm-hmm. You just, you know, that wardrobe is a wardrobe.
Yeah.
And the room is a room in mm-hmm. most films anyway. Mm-hmm. So I realized, I was like, oh my God. And anyway, my spatial awareness or imagination is not, what am I doing on this course? I didn't like it at all. And then we were allowed to pick one unit from other courses mm-hmm. After the first semester. And I accidentally chose unit with costume. It was dyeing and printing. I didn't realize it was almost like I was saying, I don't want to even look in a costume direction. I don't want to do it. But I loved this, all the dyeing fabrics, mm-hmm. printing on them. And I looked what they are doing, and they were on a stage of millinery and learning the techniques, how to make corsets. And I absolutely fell in love. And the school was, I think they saw my desperation that they allow me to swap courses where in theory it was too late to do it. Uh-huh. So round and spiral.
Yeah. So you finished
mm-hmm.
with from memory first. Costume design.
Yeah. No, it was costume interpretation.
Costume interpretation.
Because that was another thing that when I could choose between costume design and costume interpretation and I really was thinking hard about it. And I thought, because this is my second degree, mm-hmm. or I don't know, third if you count them, and I was already 30 when I was doing it. I thought I cannot, basically I wanted something that would give me skills, mm-hmm. like hard skills, yeah. that I can always find work. Mm-hmm. Because I basically was worried that I'd be working in hotels or bars mm-hmm. forever.
So I think it's really important. And as you know, greater than 11% is really important to me in terms of talking about different job roles. And another reason why I wanted you here is because you quite quickly ended up in the role of a cutter.
That's true.
Within the costume department for filmmaking and TV. And I had never heard of that role before.
And I'm wondering, either.
Exactly. So I think it would be great. And I know that you are currently oscillating between a cutter and assistant designer. You're making a transition in your kind of career path. But I think it would be great starting off as talking about potentially what a cutter is and kind of what the day-to-day is. And then maybe we move on to the assistant designer, which you're moving into now.
So, yes, I had no idea that the role like a cutter exists, as you said. I don't know how, in the shortest way, describe it. Basically, all the costumes that have to be made, because not all the costumes have to be made, but all the costumes that have to be made, usually for principal characters, they start as a drawing, or not even a drawing, as a description, and cutter is a person that kind of takes it from a drawing to an actual costume, so which involves obviously discussing it with a designer, sometimes kind of designing it together, which is fantastic. It depends on the designer. Sometimes choosing fabric and then interpreting the drawing that can be sometimes sketchy, or sometimes, as I said, there is no drawing, just a vague description. So interpreting it into an actual shape of a costume. So at this stage, you start drafting a pattern for the costume. And then you supervise. You don't, as a cutter, usually you don't make a costume. You have a team of five, four, six, depending on the production people, that are your team, your costume makers. So you kind of, from the moment of making a pattern, you're guiding them how you want the costume to be made, because it kind of comes loads of technical things, like, is the fabric right for the actual garment? If not, you have to find ways to make it right, like stiffen it. So you are responsible for basically making the costume from the sketch to the final fitting. You're always there. And you do make loads of technical decisions, but also when you draft a pattern, you need to think about like designing all the details, like shapes of lapels, the width of lapels, proportions. All this happens on a drawing table, actually.
And so what skills would you say are needed? I mean, I ask that cheekily because I know that you're highly mathematical.
I am quite. And I do use it. But I do think you really need a 3D imagination, the kind of imagination that when you see something, cube, whatever, in 3D, you easily can spread it flat. Mm-hmm. You just know how it will look flat and vice versa. That's one. But I know that not all of the cutters necessarily needed, because some people drape things on stand, which is a completely different technique. And you don't start with the flat drawing. You start with draping on a mannequin and then unpin what you drape and put it flat.
Okay.
So it's not cheating. It's just a different way of doing things. I just prefer starting with the drawing, because where sometimes you misjudge things, sometimes you have a surprise, and I actually quite like them.
Cool. So on a day-to-day basis for a cutter, they're working with the designer, they are interpreting either the verbal description or the sketches and drawings, and then making technical patterns.
Yes.
To pass to the team
that is making it. And at almost every stage of making, the people you work with, they would have a question. How would you like this finish? How would you like, how do we do this? How do we do this? So it's supervising this to the, and also as a cutter, you decide at what actually stage of a making you stop for the fitting, like you don't finish it completely, but you have to judge time, like how much time after the fitting you will have. Have you met the actor, actress before, so you vaguely know her shape? So this is always tricky for me, like making this decision to which stage of like finishing push the costume. So it gives us enough time to finish it after the fitting, but also gives us enough space to actually do alterations if needed. So this is, yeah, this is quite interesting.
Okay. So you've been inhabiting that role for quite some time now, and you're now moving into assistant designer. And I definitely have to plug this, and I know you might cringe, but this Friday, you're flying to LA for that little-known award ceremony called the Emmys. Because you worked on the season 2 of The Crown.
That's correct.
With the designer Jane Petrie.
That's correct.
And you were the assistant designer.
Well, that's what I want, because loads of... quite a few of my jobs, and it depends on a designer, I was kind of combining the assistant designer and the cutter role. Mm-hmm. So on The Crown, I was definitely cutting. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I was cutting most of the Queen's costumes, and not only, but I was also doing more than this. And Jane felt that I'm more assisting than doing both, but you need to choose something for the credit.
Yeah. Okay. So just to finish, you're being nominated for an Emmy Award for costume design. That's as your role as a cutter slash assistant. So maybe you can tell me what the assistant designer's role is, mm-hmm. and maybe the slight, you know, without too much detail, but the differentiation between a cutter and an assistant designer. As you said on The Crown, mm-hmm. you were kind of straddling both roles and making the Queen look absolutely fabulous.
I was, thank you. Thank you, darling. I was straddling the two roles, I would say to a degree, because so all the costumes that I was cutting, I was also always making what kind of accessories she would be wearing, hat, bag, shoes, trying to find them, prepare them for the fitting, looking at a schedule, shooting schedule, because there were two units shooting, and which makes working really, really complicated. It's like working on two films at the same time.
And when you say two units, for maybe people that don't understand, what is that?
That's the... So... basically, two filming crews with on two different locations with two directors. It's like two films, basically two shooting crews on the same day, always, mm-hmm. almost every day. Did I explain it or not really?
Yeah, you did. And yeah. I guess because Netflix, because of these series and because of our insatiable need to binge watch all these series, you know, production needs to speed up.
Absolutely.
And also with The Crown, obviously, there was multiple locations as well, wasn't there?
Absolutely. South so Africa the thing was and, that the yeah. two units were always on, I mean, one could be in Bulgaria and, sorry, not Bulgaria, Budapest, mm-hmm. and another one in South Africa. Mm-hmm. So you better not confuse costumes. Yeah. What goes where. And this is the assistant design, one of the also assistant designer responsibilities.
Okay. So the assistant designer is responsible, like you said, is kind of not necessarily like the cutter is looking at the technical aspects and designing the pattern. They're looking maybe at overall.
They're looking more overall, and as I said, you know, loads of costumes are rented or just bought, depending on a period. And so as a cutter, you usually only have... to do the principal characters. As the assistant designer, you have absolutely everyone, and it can be 200, easily can be 200 characters, mm-hmm, mm-hmm. For which you have to pull costumes in costume houses, bring them to the studio, always prepare the costumes for the fittings. It also involves buying. Sometimes you have a role that's buyer, but as an assistant, you also do buy things that you urgently need. So you obviously do need to know a script really, really well, mm-hmm. and a shooting schedule, and know all the slightest changes in a script, because it may absolutely involve affect costume. Mm-hmm. It's like... I remember recently it was a script where someone was killed and they were strangled. Fine. No blood, one costume is enough. And then there was a little amendment a day later. They actually the person is shot. And all of a sudden you need 6 costumes rather than, you know. So yeah. This kind of changes, you need to be really quick to notice and actually take an action. If it happens next day, you may need to basically say, listen, it's not possible. We don't have 6 costumes for this guy to be shot. He has to be strangled.
I insist he's strangled.
I insist he be strangled. Or any other way of death.
It doesn't include blood.
Doesn't include blood or water.
So for the assistant designer role, you have to be highly organised.
I know why you're laughing. Yes, you do. So you do need to be organised as a cutter as well. Yes, no, it's true. You do need to be, very organized. That's what the role involves.
I mean, I should say that I am teasing you because from time to time, I would say your organizational skills in our social lives.
I'm terrible. let's just say it. I am terrible. But also, you know, work is obviously something different where you concentrate on.
You've been nominated for an Emmy Award, so you're surely good at doing your job and being highly organised.
I'm sure I will hasn't been nominated for my organisation skills. That's definitely the truth.
Well, that's a lovely segue because you graduated and you pretty much started working straight away.
That's correct.
On, I think, a fairly well-known film.
Okay, the first film was The Duchess with Michael O'Connor designing. It was right after college, but it wasn't my first experience with film, because how it all actually happened, it happened on a second year at uni, where a designer with whom I was working on The Crown, Jane Petrie, she was then working on, I think, Elizabeth the Golden Age, and she called college and asked them to recommend to students to help her with something. Mm-hmm. And when I happened to be the one of the two recommended, and that's how I got to know Jane. And she liked our work and kind of kept in touch. And Jane is like really incredibly open and helpful person. She is always trying to help new people to get into industry because she knows how hard it is. So then after this, she was just recommending me to everyone. And it was her who recommended me to Michael O'Connor, I think. And that's how I got my first job.
Awesome.
Or second job.
So, because we've shared a flat together, and so I obviously have an inside knowledge, I think, and it's funny because I was talking to some friends or some work colleagues before, and they were saying, oh, it's such a glamorous job.
Oh! You did see me in my glamorous job.
And my response was, well, there might be some elements that are glamorous, but Basha, you know, works extremely long hours.
Correct.
You know, both of us at one point were doing 14 or 16 hour days. We would literally see each other leaving for work at 5 or 5:30 in the morning and then getting home in the evening and barely being able to string a sentence together.
Absolutely. So, not talking for months.
Exactly. Living together, not saying a word to each other. So I think it's maybe important to talk about kind of, you know, it's great leaving uni and going to the role, but I think, you know, your position of where you are now and moving into a cutter and now assistant designer, and obviously with the ultimate aim of becoming a designer, which we will talk about in a bit. But, you know, it isn't just a 9-to-5 job on any level, and it takes a lot of physical energy, creative energy, emotional strain, and, you know,
all this.
Yeah, psychological strength to be able to, you know, keep committed to a huge production as a huge team. And so, yeah, maybe the realities of the job without, you know, I know you love your job, it's not saying, but I just, it'd be great maybe to talk a little bit about that, or maybe, you know, one episode of where it was extreme.
I mean, as you said, the extreme, the long hours, it's something that we just take for, it's nothing.
Part of the industry.
It's just part of the industry, and it shouldn't be. I don't think it's in I don't think in France it's like this. It's absolutely ridiculous. But the long hours we just take for granted. That's what we do. If you don't want to do it, don't do this job, which I don't think is fair anyway. I hope it will change, actually. So the long hours, long commute, because, as you know, the film studios are quite far out. You know, they're not in London. So you always have to commute. So you always have to commute to work. That just makes you really, really tired. But if you want me to talk about, like, what actually is really, really challenging. So all this, what you said, is just part of, like, every job.
Yeah.
What can make it much better or much worse? There are people, usually.
So the team you're working with?
Team you're working with, actors you're working with. Because I think if you have one, which happens, if you have one particularly difficult person, it takes so much of your energy and it can be so deflating. On top of long hours and on top of the fact that you have to be creative all the time, that you have to manage your team, that... So I think if you happen to work with a particularly difficult... and it can be either designer or an actor or director or producer, but sometimes one person is really enough to make your work absolute bloody hell.
Yeah. Not that you've had any experience with that recently. Right. So that's kind of the harsh reality of the day-to-day, the job. But your job is highly creative.
It is.
You are every day using your creativity.
That is true.
So maybe we can talk about, you know, maybe the perks or the benefits, you know, especially because you had a career in a completely different industry beforehand. You made a decisive decision. You've made it sound like you accidentally fell into where you are now.
It kind of looked like that.
Which, you know.
I would lie if I say that I arrived here with the, you know, with the plan where every step was planned.
Okay, but you were focused.
I was. No, absolutely. Yeah. Absolutely.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
So, you know, that it's like two different worlds. And maybe you can talk about, you know, what you love about your job, you know, as an assistant designer.
And as a cut, I mean, both. Actually, what I love is what you mentioned is creativity. It gives me absolutely enormous kick. You know, like having an idea and then making it happen, and not always is a good idea. Then you just have to, you know, scrap it and start from the scratch. But just this process. From reading the script and making obviously a research into the period, because you kind of have to keep it, not always, but you need a knowledge of this. So combining this and then creating something, I don't know, I just cannot really describe. It's the feeling of being creative that always gives me so much energy, and a process of thinking about ideas, and then seeing it done and seeing it on screen.
Yeah, I would say like the times that we have worked together on, you know, things that I've been making, and that you have collaborated with me. I would say like. It's when there's a blank slate, like when we start talking about ideas, about kind of what I'm thinking, etc.
Oh, my God, I remember when we were talking about the costume for the opera singer.
Yeah. And you were almost giddy with excitement.
That's exactly what I'm talking about. Yeah. I don't know what it is. Yeah. I cannot really explain it. And maybe it's because I kind of came to this conclusion that I am creative and that I have to be creative, like, relatively late, if you know what I mean. I was, I mean, as a kid, I was always drawing little sculptures, but I thought every kid does it. And it was always kind of slightly disregarded by my parents. I always thought I should study rather than doing these stupid things. Mm-hmm. So it almost, I'm not saying it wasn't allowed, but mm-hmm. it wasn't appreciated.
Or encouraged.
Or encouraged, yeah. And it wasn't seen as anything important. Mm-hmm. So maybe the fact that I arrived quite late to this point where I realized that I am creative, I need this creativity, and it's just pure joy for me. Mm-hmm. I mean, it's just this.
Yeah. And I see that, and like I said, that giddiness and what I really loved about that. And it's kind of, it just struck me when you were talking earlier about seeing things in 3D. I remember mm-hmm. talking to you about that costume for this opera singer, and I could see you sculpting it. I think sculptings were in your mm-hmm. mind from what I'd said. So, yeah.
I do remember this conversation very well. Mm-hmm. Yeah, exactly. See, this is exactly what I love. Mm-hmm. This is exactly what I love. And this is kind of what the process is with the costume designer on a film. And I just absolutely love this bit where the ideas are just springing.
Okay. So what advice would you give someone wanting to work in costume design, or maybe the costume department, because there's multiple roles, mm-hmm. isn't there?
Yeah.
So you have the costume makers.
Oh, my God, yes.
That are working
to
the cutter.
Yeah.
And the cutter's working with the assistant designer and the designer.
That's correct. But then you also have... It's really actually quite complicated department, because then you have... When you have making, any kind of making, you have to have a breakdown department with the textile artists. So it's dyeing fabrics, printing fabrics, like dyeing is like you always have to dye something. You just cannot possibly do it without it. And then after the costume is made, it's really important to break it down to the level of wariness. You uh-huh. even if it's very ground ball dress, uh-huh. bit of a spraying of color into it, bit of a like. Just looking, making it look lived in slightly.
Right.
So that's the breakdown department. Mm-hmm. And then you have like the whole team on set mm-hmm. that takes care of costumes there, takes care of continuity of actors. It's almost like and actually quite often this too, the making breakdown, the whole design part. And these people on set, sometimes you don't even meet.
I guess on huge films.
Yeah. But so, it's loads of roles within. You even if you love shopping, you have a role like buyer. Mm-hmm. All you do all day is shopping for various stuff, which I would hate.
Okay, so maybe we may need to narrow it down. So if you wanted to be a cutter or mm-hmm. or a designer, maybe we can talk about those two roles. What kind of skills mm-hmm. do you kind of need, or what advice would you give to someone?
Well, you know, for me, going to college worked really well. Mm-hmm. So I certainly would recommend this because, I mean, it did give me skills for mm-hmm. sure. It didn't give me cutting skills. I think there is a massive kind of, like a hole or gap where cutting is, I think, on fashion courses mm-hmm. that's taught, but not on costume courses, mm-hmm. not to a degree you need it. Mm-hmm. So my kind of knowledge of this is actually very intuitive. Mm-hmm. I'm self-taught pretty mm-hmm. much. So because going to college really worked for me in terms of getting contacts, because mm-hmm. you have to do your work experience there, yeah. and you have to look for and somehow, you know, being doing a costume course in a college, I've noticed like within the people that work in an industry, that gives you certain credibility. Mm-hmm. So I definitely would recommend this.
So going to college and then just working and taking on jobs.
I would say working, and I would say one thing that I didn't do. Because I started on my first film, The Duchess, I started basically making costumes. Mm-hmm. But usually you start as a trainee, and I actually see the fact that I didn't start as a trainee as a disadvantage. Mm-hmm. Because had I started as a trainee, I would have a better idea of options, what's possible mm-hmm. within, you know, within the costume department. Mm-hmm. Because as a trainee, you go everywhere. Mm-hmm. And see it. And I was kind of slightly stuck in this costume making world. So I think I would say, I would definitely say go to college and then kind of shop around, see, because maybe what you think you want is not necessary and you rather be doing what something else.
Yeah, breakdown or something like that.
Yeah, exactly, because it's really fascinating.
Okay, awesome. So maybe we can talk about now the kind of next step, the Ford journey, because you do have ambitions to become a designer.
I do.
In your own right, which I'm very excited about and can't wait for.
Which, I mean, yeah.
So kind of what direction do you need to take, or what steps are you going to take to get there? And what do you need to be a designer?
Well, this is quite tricky, because actually, do you know what is one of the, for me, always was one of the biggest challenges in this job and in this industry? And I'm not saying that this is for everyone. Mm-hmm. That was the truth for me. It was how to avoid being pigeonholed in one role. It's so easy. It's really a fight to like, oh, you are a costume maker, so you forever will be employed as a costume maker, or you are a cutter, or you are... It's really easy to fall in this hole
and never... Because I know you're an exceptional
cutter. And if you're good, that's really, really, really difficult to get out of it. And I have a reputation of a good cutter. And there is also, I think, a shortage of cutters. Not so many people do it. It's quite hard. It's very responsible. It requires quite specific skills. So I don't think it's necessarily a job people dream of. You know, it doesn't sound that glamorous.
Yeah. It's funny because it doesn't sound...
Even if it is incredibly creative and brilliant.
But it doesn't sound like what it is.
No, not at all.
Because cutting sounds really like you're cutting fabric. So that's why I really wanted to talk to you about it.
No,
because...
no, in terms of like cutting, I don't even cut fabric. I finish with drafting a pattern and then I pass it on my team. It's still called cutter. Okay, so I was talking about that the challenge is not to get pigeonholed in one role, because that leads me to say it's really difficult to change your position, swap your position. And I was quite lucky to work with designers that kind of saw me as the assistant designer, and they credited me as this. It happened quite naturally. But to start designing is a completely different story. And to start with, it would be good to have an agent. And to have an agent, you need to have an experience and portfolio. So it's a bit of a catch-22. So possibly it'd be building up portfolio, doing short films. I have to admit here, I do not have a specific plan. I feel like
it's worked in the past.
I know it did. It did. So I'm kind of, I'm hoping that something magically would happen, but no, it won't happen magically. I think I need more experience. I don't know, actually. No, I wanted to say I need more experience as the assistant designer to see the broader spectrum of how the whole department works. But probably working on a short film as a designer would give me exactly the same.
Okay. So I'm sad to say that we're coming to the end of our discussion.
Are we?
It's gone so quick. I know, I just looked at the clock.
Okay.
I know.
I saw you looking at the clock. I thought, oh my God, I'm boring her to death.
You could never bore me. So I'm going to do it with everyone I speak to on Greater Than 11%, I'm going to ask them to maybe tell me about a role or a job or a career that fascinates them, that they either know little about or want to hear more about.
This, remember when I said about Don telling me at our foundation course that maybe I should study fine art, and I didn't because I felt like I wouldn't make it happen for me. But it's still not that I don't know artists, like looking at you at the moment, and I know your struggles, but I also, someone I would like to hear is an artist, a woman who is living off her art. That's her job. Being an artist is her job and nothing else.
I'll do my best. I think I can manage that one. Great. And then the other question is there someone in the creative industries that you would love to hear on Greater Than 11%? And who would that be and why?
I would like to hear Sarah Gavron, who is a film director. Mm-hmm. So I chose my own industry. But I worked with her on, she did direct Suffragette, and I was lucky to work on it. And I would like to hear how she got where she is now.
Okay, I'll do my best. Basha Kuzna, it has been a delight. I wish you every success this
Thank
coming
you,
weekend
darling.
In LA at the Emmy Awards, and all the best going forward into your career as a designer.
Thanks so much, darling. Thank you. It's been a pleasure.
Thank you for listening. If you enjoyed, please write a review on Apple Podcasts, as that helps other people find Greater Than 11%. And also stay subscribed to keep up to date on the weekly releases. This podcast is made possible by the support of Hub, an insight-led content agency based in London. A huge thank you to the producers, Pat Murray and James Haberson, and to Mary Continenza for designing the beautiful artwork.